Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 510. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
I have not. The one thing that I'm kind of bummed about as of this recording is that I have only consumed three of, I'm assuming, five matches. From the NXT card, because I know I did not see Shayna versus Io Shirai, and I did not see Cole versus Gargano part two, I suppose, even though obviously the other one was the best two out of three. So, it feels like that's the best WWE TV. And there are definitely certain things like Super Showdown that I am not really going to bother with taking my time out to watch. Because,
really? You're not going to watch Super Showdown from 2 to 6 p.m. on Friday?
Yeah, and I do think that we've talked about that. The timing is kind of... You know, it's kind of funny. I did think to myself, I'm like, oh, well, I do get out of work early now since I work four nines and then a four-hour day on Friday. So I was like, oh, you know what? I could watch these daytime pay-per-views now. But honestly, even at that point, there are other things that I would prefer to be doing with that time. Sometimes it's yard work, sometimes it is, drinking an alcoholic beverage. You know, these things happen. So, yeah, even if I am free on Friday, I'm probably not gonna be watching the show. Because, I'm trying to think, do you think that there's a possibility, I guess... To me, that it seems like Brock Lesnar is going to cash in on Seth Rollins. But is there any chance that they end up having him cash in on Kofi instead?
I think there's a very good chance that's exactly what's going to happen, yes.
Because that is, to me, like... There are not a lot of things that are drawn, and that's the other thing that hurts to me, Super Showdown. There isn't a whole lot that's drawing me in. But that part of the show, I guess, which obviously will involve Rollins one way or the other, you know, even if Lesnar doesn't cash in on him, because I would imagine that they'd have that, they wouldn't have that match first, would they? I guess that'd be second.
I don't know how they're going to do that. No, because
I guess I was just starting to think of the logistics of it, and I'm just like, oh, well, it'd be kind of weird either way, because if Rollins has the match early and Lesnar doesn't come out, they have a completely different story to write.
Yeah, no, I you know what? And if he's going to go after Kofi...
And Kofi's first.
I think that's the way you would do it, is having Seth, you know, the injured Seth, you know, fight valiantly to retain his championship against Baron Corbin, who is now coming in at an advantage, but Brock never shows up. You know, everyone thinks the coast is clear, breathes a sigh of relief, and then he comes out after Kofi defeats Dolph Ziggler, yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Why? What were you thinking? Is the most
well? No, I guess because it becomes if Lesnar doesn't come out for the first whichever match is first, if Lesnar doesn't come out for it, it becomes obvious. You know what I mean? And I guess at least with the story that they've been telling at this time. It would make sense to have Rollins go on first then, and then have the impending doom of Kofi coming on later in the show, you know?
Right. But you could still play the doom of Kofi as being surprising because Brock has turned his attention completely to Seth Rollins over the last 2 weeks.
Oh, right.
I mean, for people who follow things as closely, I guess, as we do, your brain will turn on to that okay, you didn't go after Seth, who's going to go after Kofi, but, maybe they've done a good enough job for the casual audience, or whoever that is anymore, to not be thinking along those lines when Kofi's out there.
I guess to me, that kind of, I guess it's only two matches, really. The only thing kind of drawing me in, like, is there anything else that really interests you that's on
that
show?
Curiosity of Undertaker versus Goldberg after all these years?
Oh.
It intrigues me. I wonder what this match is going to look like. Are they going to try to have a decently length match, or are they just going to go in, hit do the greatest hits and, try to get out of there, as quick as possible, maybe even 5 minutes, a la the Goldberg-Lesnar match from Mania 33, which was awesome, by the way.
They packed a lot into a short time. But to me, the giveaway in that situation is that it was Brock Lesnar and not Undertaker. And despite many people's grumblings, Brock Lesnar can and will have a good match when he is invested.
That is true. Goldberg was definitely, very, very, fairly covered up tonight. This match did not come, I don't know how long ago they came to the agreement for this match. Within the time frame, maybe 4 to 6 weeks. So I didn't really get a good glimpse of Goldberg's physique, or, he seemed like they didn't even do the pyro entrance, and he seemed like he was sweating, just making the march from his dressing room to the ring.
I guess I didn't pay that good attention. He's just kind of naturally a big guy, and he was in pretty good shape previously, and it does sound like he works out on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah, he's in great shape by any standard for a man his age, of course.
Yes, but...
But has he had the time and the desire to put himself in the shape he was for the Brock run? I'm not sure about that. I don't know if he feels like he needed to, because that he has gone on record many times that took a lot out of him.
Oh. Yeah, well, that is kind of one of those crazy things. Like, this event, Super Showdown, is one of those things that it's just like, I understand why the WWE is more profitable than it is in some ways popular, especially in the viewing demographic. Because, if you're pulling out enough money to make it worth the while of, Brock Lesnar, who doesn't like to travel, but you get him to go literally halfway around the world. And then you talk Goldberg into, like, no, this is my perfect sending off. I got a little, mini title run and then lost, dropped the strap next. That's a lot of money, man. That's the one thing that, just with this event, that it always kind of blows my mind. Like, I don't know what money they're getting, but it's a lot, because they're talking these guys that really didn't want to go back into the ring. Oh, and I guess I was thinking of Shawn Michaels, but at least
Shawn, yeah.
I ever ended up seeing that match, because I never ended up watching that one either. But
yeah, I did, and it was quite bad, and I have very little doubt in my mind that Sean regrets it, doesn't want to talk about it again, wants to treat it like it doesn't count.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess that to me is what that's why I'm not intrigued by the Lesnar Goldberg match, because man, I think it's mostly for the money, which I don't blame them, but you do kind of wonder if that's the only motivation, like, and it's not for the whole, you know, really for his kid and everything this time around. Where the mindset is. And Taker just, it's been a few years since he's had a good match.
It has been. I mean, the run against the extended run against Brock, not counting their match where he lost the streak, which was a disaster in a number of ways physically for the man.
Right.
But yeah, he had a couple of good matches with Brock. That's going on 4 years ago, and then yeah, nothing really any good. I mean, the match with Shane McMahon at WrestleMania is memorable only for Shane's.
Leap off the cell. Yeah.
And then from there, there's certainly nothing good.
No. So, I mean, and that, I guess that's my problem with that is that it could turn out, like you said, like, at best, it'll turn out something like that Goldberg Lesnar match that went 5 minutes. It was a slugfest, like you said, basically all just the hits and call it an evening. I would think that would be their best case scenario for everyone involved.
Yeah, but you're right. There's not a lot on the show to really sink your teeth into. I've actually got nothing. I've actually got nothing going on this weekend, so or particular Friday, so I probably will end up watching it, but I think I'm going to wait until it's, you know, fully on demand.
Oh.
And fast forward through a lot of stuff. You know, I will absolutely spend zero time in my life watching Lars Sullivan vivisect the Lucha House Party.
It would seem that you are creating an excellent segue here, sir. I give that one at least an A, possibly an A+. Lars Sullivan did not have a good promo tonight.
No, he absolutely did not. I mean, the guy already has so much going against him. so very much. And then they give him that. That is what Dean Ambrose / Jon Moxley has been talking about. That was a promo written essentially by Vince McMahon for Vince McMahon, with a number of his favorite big words in it.
And you could tell that they were setting it up already, because they hadn't really talked about it too much, but message sender Corey Graves, immediately starts, as Lars Sullivan comes down to the ringside, starts talking about how intelligent Lars Sullivan is behind those eyes. And, the sell job for what was to come was in motion, and I kind of got concerned at that point, because they kind of did something similar to Rowan when he first.
Oh yes, yes, yes. The first time in my life I'd ever heard the term Bittner. Yes.
It's one of those things. It's just like, you don't need to use gigantic words to be considered smart, I guess. And that's just kind of one of those things that It's stuck in Vince's head that you've got to use these words to sound smart. And it just doesn't work, you know? It really does not help him out at all. And it makes it equally weird when you've basically had Aleister Black doing something similar for the past month.
Yes.
So, like, they're kind of doubling down on, you know, on something that isn't good. And, you know, it wasn't working for him. And honestly, I will admit, I think I liked his promo tonight more than I've liked his other ones. Because it was a little more direct and to the point.
Yeah, as far as Aleister Black is concerned, I guess his delivery on these promos is getting better, but still the content is just... Who does he want? What does he want? What I brought it up last week. What does anybody have to gain by challenging him when he's just sitting in a dark room, not even going to the ring?
Yeah, that is the million-dollar question.
I'm definitely not a fan of what they're doing with Aleister Black at all. It's just not hitting the right spots with me. It's, you know, we mentioned it pretty much every week. He's using unused, you know, 2015 Bray Wyatt material. And it's just not working for me.
So I mean, there are, because that was one of those things that it did kind of strike me in general. I know that we usually praise SmackDown on this here program, but tonight kind of was like one of those nights, and I'm just like, man, I am not feeling it as much as I normally would after SmackDown. And I guess those two promos were at least part of the reason. What else was kind of strange? Because,
well, there was three longish pro. The three promos we've already talked about, or about actually, we have talk about Goldberg's promo. There's no need to. I mean,
oh,
and then the Goldberg promo, right, the Lars Sullivan promo, and the Aleister Black promo. All, you know, took place in that second hour, and kind of, you know, made that second hour really drag.
Oh, okay. Well, then, and yeah. And I guess that's kind of funny. SmackDown
and also the Shane McMahon Roman Reigns segment as well. So there were four talking segments in the last hour. And one match. Or two matches. No, there was one match because the Andrade Apollo Crews match never really started.
Oh, yeah. And the women's match was you could have sneezed and missed it pretty much.
Even two segments, it was a really good match, I thought.
Yeah, that was probably the highlight. I apologize. I went too far.
You're right. I mean, it was they've got to hype up a show in 3 days that's in an unusual time slot. So they didn't put a lot of wrestling. Essentially, didn't put a lot of wrestling on this week's TV. You know, period, including Raw. And yeah, it SmackDown did not hit as well as it usually does. And you know, they're promoting. I think these next two or three pay-per-views, including Super Showdown, are going to be pretty rough because they're all kind of coming, you know, over the course of the next 5-6 weeks. We got 2 weeks until they do have Stomping Ground, and then another 3 weeks after that is Extreme Rules. So, yeah, and they've already announced that Roman Reigns is facing Drew McIntyre at Stomping Grounds. So, this whole thing with Roman Reigns and Shane McMahon and Drew McIntyre is continuing. No matter what happens on Friday. So that's not promising.
Oh. Yeah. That's another subject that I feel like we've gone over a couple of times couple of weeks with good old Shane O'Mac, is that it's just, you know, it continues to be crazy that he is like their main heel right now. Like a 50-year-old man with limited at best in-ring experience is your top heel. I mean, I don't get it, you know? I don't get it. But, I mean, he's, you know, chewing up segment after segment. Ah.
Yes, and it doesn't feel like it's going to stop, because they'll probably find a way to drag it out through to at least Extreme Rules, if not SummerSlam. But I'm not hope. I don't have a lot of hope for this summer in WWE. I really don't. Just what they've got set up right now, and even with the wild card rule allowing them to do more mixing and matching, hopefully they can turn things around at least heading into SummerSlam.
Well, and it's kind of funny that you mentioned the mixing and matching, because they haven't really done anything like that. All they've done with the wild card rule is double down on their top storylines.
They have, but Alexa Bliss is challenging Bayley for the SmackDown Women's Championship.
Yeah, that is pretty interesting. I was just going to say that I wasn't completely surprised by that result.
No, nah, I really wasn't. As the match was going on, you know, you can see certain things, like Charlotte had already put on the figure eight and had it interrupted, oh. And she, you know, she'd had her pin on the Natural Selection interrupted, so you could tell that, you know, she'd already hit her all of her best stuff. So, you know, she's probably not going to win that match, and then, of course, Alexa Bliss is a heel and Carmella's a babyface, so you kind of... Yeah, no, no. You know what? If it gives at least a short break to Charlotte, I'm okay with that.
And that is kind of the only interesting thing about Alexa Bliss, is that just because they kind of have played her as a babyface on Raw? Question mark after that statement?
They have, yes. That is very interesting, yeah. She was in total heel mode, no Nikki Cross in sight, yeah. The Iconics weren't even on their own home brand show. Yeah, that was really weird. That feels like something that was maybe decided in the last 24 hours, yes. Like Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross were going to be going after the Iconics. But who knows, they obviously love and trust Alexa Bliss, and they need a new opponent for Bayley, and maybe someone finally remembered that Asuka and Kairi Sane exist.
Oh, well, I...
Well, nothing you can tell from tonight's show.
The Iconics barely exist themselves, and they're the champions.
They exist more on Twitter than they do on Mean WWE TV.
God bless them, I guess, for still working for it.
Yeah, I mean, they have not won a match since that schlocky deal they did where they had them face two jobbers right after WrestleMania.
Oh.
match.
Jeez. Just, yeah, that division is in shambles. And I kind of made the statement last week after, after the John Moxley interview got posted by Chris Jericho, that once Sasha Banks, I would hope that the people who criticized her would think twice about their criticism after the John Moxley interview on Chris Jericho's podcast. I
totally agree. I don't think I've said too much against her. I understand why she's upset. I understand, you know, her frustrations. My only issue with Sasha Banks is she's got 2 years left on her contract, supposedly. So that's a long time to be in limbo. The way probably is, unless they are going to let her, they are going to give her a release, it's probably is for the best for them to work things out on both sides.
Yeah, it is one of those things that still seems very typical of the WWE to be stubborn sometimes when they don't need to be either. Especially, like, not that you can change everything that you do because of one podcast, but, you know, but Vince seems pretty damn stubborn. Although it's kind of funny that kind of side hasn't popped up recently. And I guess this standoff with Sasha kind of seems like one of those things, like, because, I mean, they haven't, like, Corey Graves hasn't even kind of referred to Sasha through Bayley recently.
No. It does feel like you know, they're hoping, you know, things work out. And who knows, maybe they're already on the way too, and they're just, you know, wait to, you know, reintroduce her back into things. You know, there's definitely a lot of places that, you know, she can be inserted into. Obviously, there's a wild card rule, so she could end up on either show any week. You know, it's becoming fairly clear this whole the early Lacey Evans push isn't quite working out because, you know, Lacey's not quite ready. It doesn't seem like Lacey's quite ready for it, especially in the ring. So you could always just throw Sasha and Becky in a match together, you know, to get a good match on pay-per-view.
Yeah, that was definitely something that could be talked about, too. Because I kind of got that vibe, too, that... especially this week on Raw, that Lacey Evans was,
I mean, there were absolutely moments in that match where Charlotte was having to put Lacey Evans in position to do stuff. It was pretty plain if you knew what to look for in those situations.
Yeah,
she was having a rough night.
I guess it isn't that much of a surprise because she hasn't really done any indie work, if I'm correct.
No, she never did any indie work. She was brought up pretty early in her run in NXT. You know, they never really explored her as they never really had her have very many long matches. She never really had any real feuds in NXT. She never challenged for the title. She never had a moment on a takeover.
Yeah, I guess that's one of those ones that I find it hard to blame her because it's just like, hey, do you want to go up? Yep, I'll take more money. But it doesn't do her any favors when that happens. Because, I mean, even though Elias is still doing his thing, you know, they've never... Would you say they've ever truly trusted him at some juncture?
They've, you know, I mean,
because he's never had that match.
Well, there's, I think maybe the longest match he's ever had was a pay-per-view match for the Intercontinental title with Seth Rollins, and that's essentially putting him in there with arguably their best guy. And it was probably also one of Seth Rollins' weaker matches of 2018. So, yeah, I mean, you know what? But Elias is such a gimmick that it works. I mean, he can always get his seat back, you know, with a guitar session.
And, do you think that Lacey Evans kind of has any potential on the mic?
She had her thing of doing her entrance on the her walk down the ramp and then walk back up. But then when it was time to, you know, but then she, literally the first physical activity she had between, let's just say, the Royal Rumble and right after WrestleMania was mixing it up with Becky Lynch. She had one match with Natalya before her match with Becky Lynch at Money in the Bank.
Yeah. That's just not enough experience.
No, it really isn't. So no. They are absolutely to blame for, you know, putting her out there and putting her out there in such a high profile position to, you know, fail in front of the audience, because we've seen it in the past. We've seen it with the guys of the you know 2000 era, the one that gets mentioned a lot, or, you know, Chris Masters, you know, a guy they brought up really really quickly. Did the best that he could, but he showed a lot of, you know, greenness in high profile spots, and by the time he actually got any good, it was too late. You could even talk about Bobby Lashley when they brought him up and gave him the mega push. I mean, they gave him the mega push.
But
he wasn't ready for it, and it petered out. And
yeah, and I guess another guy currently in the WWE, too, that you could argue that about is Drew McIntyre.
Drew, though...
Or did he have more experience, I guess, at that juncture?
Yeah. I mean, Drew's been wrestling. Drew's got, a, you know, probably all total, probably close to 15 years of wrestling. You start, you know, starting with the European Indies and his first run in WWE, and, you know, his turned to the Indies, where he became something of a work rate darling, you could call him.
Oh,
and he got to have some good matches, and he got to have those 20 plus main events on NXT takeovers. That's not more McIntyre's problem. McIntyre's problem
No. I guess I meant his first. Maybe you could consider his first run that he wasn't ready.
We're only talking about the first run, okay?
Yeah, I'm only. I'm not talking about the present day, or, you know, him kind of reinventing himself on the indies, which it'd be kind of in a lot of ways, it'd be kind of interesting to see something like that happen in the WWE. Like, it kind of. That whole thing with AEW kind of makes that take on a new context of the WWE pulling in someone like that, to me. You know what I mean?
But no, I mean, yeah, absolutely. Drew McIntyre in his original run was someone who falls into that category. I mean,
okay,
they literally had Vince McMahon go out there and call him the Chosen One. And then he had middling matches with Kane on pay-per-view. So, yeah, no. You've got to be very careful with these, you know, kind of raw talents that have so much potential. But, you know, we're weeks removed from that, from the the unveiling of the Bret Hart, the wanted Bret Hart versus Tom McGee tape. You know, Tom McGee, someone with who seemingly had all the raw materials, but was never able to put it together, and was kind of left to, twirl in the wind. Yeah, you don't want that to happen with people you have. You have a lot of, a lot of hope for.
I'm not ready to write off Lacey Evans, but
no,
yeah,
no.
They have done her zero favors,
right?
And up to this point.
And it's hurting Becky as well. You can feel that Becky is not as popular as she was before WrestleMania. They have not. This feud with Lacey Evans and just the general follow up post WrestleMania has been poor for Becky Lynch. It definitely should not have been this.
Well, and that's definitely somewhere where the aforementioned Sasha Banks could come in handy. Sasha is an opponent for Becky Lynch. Would be great for, I think, everyone involved.
Sasha as a heel, which we haven't seen in years now, would be real. I think really, really good, because I do believe that she's a good baby face, but she's a natural heel. And I think it's time for her to get back to her NXT boss roots.
And I mean, that's been one of those things that, I guess just in general, they never really did well with Sasha's character from NXT, never really became prevalent on WWE TV, and Bayley's never really did either. And I mean, they're just finally giving Bayley a chance to reinvent herself at this point. Although I would argue, and I think, you and I talked about it a number of times, that this change for Bayley did start pretty early in the year when she had to cover for an injured Sasha Banks.
Yeah, it definitely did. She had to, quote unquote, to say something that's a constant cliche. She had to grow up during that period, and she's continued to grow up. And, she said that she's not, she's come out and said that she's not here to give out hugs anymore. And that's good, because they never found the essence of the hugger character as something that, was going to be, this, multi-million dollar merchandise, cash cow for the kids market. They never crossed that bridge, and now for Bayley to have a more adult, a more grown-up character that seems to be resonating, that's been good.
I'm all for it. I think she's a great wrestler, and I'm glad that they've maybe finally found some footing for her, because I that's at least been part of the problem, because it was kind of funny that Sasha was in that category with Charlotte of almost being over pushed there to start, but it really hurt the development of a lot of other people. And I mean, that's the other thing with when I keep on seeing Charlotte on both shows too, it's just like, oh my gosh, guys, like,
there was no need for her on Raw. And her being there in the match she was in, hurt both the Raw and SmackDown women's divisions more than it helped. Tonight on SmackDown, to have, because the triple threat match ended up working out so well, that was fine. But I could certainly use for Charlotte to be off the TV for a few weeks.
That one's just tough. She's really good at what she does, but it is one of those things where she helped build the division, but to keep it sustainable, you need more than one face, or at least other stepping stones for her to face. And they really have not done a good job of building those people. And yeah, Bailey getting that push finally to kind of establish herself would, it will help Charlotte in the long run. Because, I mean, they haven't really had... Did they have a follow-up match after that?
After what?
After the Money in the Bank.
No, they have not. They have not done a one-on-one match with Bailey and Charlotte. No.
Okay, because yeah, I mean, it is a feud that I don't think we've seen. But I'm also okay if they give Bailey a little bit of a run before they go into that feud.
Yeah, I'm okay with that too. Yeah, you could definitely keep them apart for a little while. Yeah, as I said, Charlotte is now getting to the point where when her music hits, and I like Charlotte a lot, I think she's great, but it's starting to get eye rolling now. And it is starting to have that feel like she's just being inserted into situations just to get her on TV. Because women's segments will die without her.
Yeah, and I mean, they do have plenty of people. And I guess that's kind of been the interesting thing with Alexa Bliss. Like, she has claimed that she has been ring ready for a while now, but the WWE has definitely not shown any inclination to get her in the ring.
No. Her situation this entire, it's gone on almost a year now. She had the initial injury. Not that far, but you know, maybe 7 or 8 months. But it feels like it's been going on for a long time. And I mean, they probably made the, even if she didn't have like an ongoing issue, they probably made the right decision to take her out of Money in the Bank. Never probably should have put her in, had her in it in the first place. Because they were just going to take her out. But yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is, you know, when Bayley was with Women's Raw Women's Champion a couple years back, they put her against Alexa Bliss. And Alexa Bliss pretty much, that feud with Alexa Bliss is pretty much the reason Bayley fell into obscurity for, you know, a year or two.
Oh.
Because she was just flat out embarrassed in that.
Yeah, and I do hope, obviously, that that Bailey goes over in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, Bailey, because I don't think she ever got anything really back on Alexa Bliss either. So I don't know if they'll bring up their history and you know pretty much how easily Alexa Bliss took the Raw Women's Championship from Bailey. And then they had that silly kendo stick match where Bailey was too afraid to use a weapon because she was so nice, and then that match.
I'm like, oh, I kind of remember something, but that just really jolted the old memory banks.
Yeah, I mean that set Bailey's career back maybe 2 years until the last month. Really, I mean, if you really think about it, I mean, she had some moments here and there, but that really set her back a lot. That whole ordeal.
Yeah, she had to act like an infant because that's what anyone that hugs is. That they're just an infant, evidently.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is also one of those kind of situations where even when I was looking at it on the face, like, the WWE certainly is not always the quickest to trust someone who's been out on injury for that amount of time.
No. And once again, as we said, I mean, Alexa Bliss is going to be on loan from Raw. Once again, whatever this brand split means anymore. Bayley needs a win. You know, if they want to hold off on doing Bayley versus Charlotte until SummerSlam, you know, that's fine. You know, give Bayley a couple of wins in the meantime. That's good. Yeah, but yeah, no. Bayley really needs a run here.
So, I'm trying to think. We've covered a lot so far. And I'm trying to think of a next good thing, because I mean, I think that's a good end to the ladies this week.
Oh yeah.
And what else is there on Super Showdown? Like, I mean, is Triple H and Randy Orton really worth talking about?
Oh boy, yeah, that's another one where I really hope they don't decide to have a 20-minute chin lock fest. I mean, I will fast forward the hell out of that.
Yeah, and I mean, that's another one where, do I think that match is going to be bad? No, I do not. But do I really care if I miss that? No, I do not.
No. I mean, there's really no reason. I mean, this is a show for a foreign government that just happens to be on the WWE Network. Maybe Brock, you know, it's as we got back into earlier. Maybe Brock Lesnar will cash in.
Oh.
Or maybe he'll just fuck around again. Because this is just a house show that happens, a house show in a foreign country that happens to be on the network.
Yeah, and it's always, what was I going to say? Ah, crap. Whatever. It is kind of a glorified house show that has a few implications from the main storylines, but otherwise really just is a spectacle. Like, it's not as big as WrestleMania really, because the storylines aren't built up over, you know, from Royal Rumble until, well, for 3 months, I suppose, is the best you could say. And Super Showdown is certainly not that. Trips and Orton, gonna be fine, but whatever, because it's there for the government. Because that was another one where I heard that the feud that's going on 20 years, and I'm just like, ah, man. Like,
it really isn't.
Oh, is it more like 30 years?
Orton's not barely even 40 years old.
Wait,
it's still under 15 years. I believe it's still under 15 years since that night where Evolution turned on Randy Orton.
Oh. Because I was going to say, he came in at 23, so, but I guess that isn't necessarily all that close to 20 years.
Yeah, I don't know why they're dating these two more than they need to. When they could easily just say 15. And it's pretty well true.
Yeah, okay.
That's weird, because they usually do get, you know, weird about, you know, aging their talent, you know, and particularly Triple H, is pretty he's pretty self aware when it comes to those types of things of not wanting to appear old.
Yeah. So they could have used to drop that, especially if they do have a legitimate right to say that it's only been 15 years instead of 20. Because I'm like, dear Lord, this has been around that long. Oh man. I'm trying to think. Oh, well, I kind of brought it up earlier, and we may as well kind of. Do you have any other WWE topics to go with, or should I go back to? We didn't really talk about the Moxley interview with Jericho. I'm assuming that you listened to it.
I have listened to that, and I have listened to both parts of Moxley's interview with Wade Keller as well.
Oh, well, I did not listen to those.
Oh, jeez. Well, we're going to pause right now, and then Kevin's going to listen to that for the next 2.5 hours, and then we're going to and then we're going to pick this back up.
Oh,
no.
That would mean me subscribing to the Torch again.
No. It's in Wade's free podcast.
Oh.
And iTunes and wherever you download your free podcast from.
I guess I could do that, but I'm not going to go back and listen to that before we finish this show. Because we would be well into tomorrow, and neither of us wants to do that.
I can't believe you didn't know that, you know, Wade Keller that the Torch has a they've got a free daily podcast stream.
Some
of our good friends co-host those with him too.
I'll just put it this way. The Stunt Granny crew did not feel as welcome at the Torch as those hosting those shows with him currently.
Oh, really? I've never noticed.
There was nothing outright problematic, and I will say that those who are not recording currently is the one more in line for our departure than anyone else. But we were kind of working on the Stunt Granny concept anyway at the time when that all went down. But so I'm kind of petty like that. I will admit, much like WWE, I am petty and do not follow Wade Keller's accounts.
It's okay. I've been petty quite a bit over the Torch issue, and I wasn't even here back then.
So I don't subscribe to his free podcast. I don't follow on Yield Twitter, although clearly with the friends that we have, I certainly see a lot of his timeline. I didn't realize he did 2.5 hours with Dean Ambrose, but I can't honestly imagine that he had that much more to follow up on.
He absolutely did. I mean,
oh, okay.
It was, if you listen to both, you pretty much get the whole story. And even he says, all right, from now on, that's it. Whenever I go on a podcast, it's just to promote AEW. It's just to promote AEW.
Yeah. I mean, he certainly had a lot of material. I would say.
Because in the way, I mean, they talk a lot about. Well, they part two is definitely more interesting than part one, so we only got time for one. Because part two is where they talk at length about. Wade and Jon Moxley talk about the Brock Lesnar match at WrestleMania and what went wrong. And that's like 20 plus minutes on that.
You might have me at that, just because that was always one of those matches that, man, it was so weird because. Just because, in general, I feel like Brock Lesnar has had good matches. And that is definitely one, you know, and outside the Undertaker breaking the streak thing. But that was kind of due to injury problems more than anything, I would contend. That Ambrose match is... I don't know, I don't want to say legendary, but, oh man, that was just one of those ones that was so bad that it really stuck with me. Just because, the WrestleMania matches are at least passable these days to good. You know, like, when you get a stinker, it's really easy to remember.
Oh, yeah, that was a stinker, and he, you know... you could tell that after all those years, he really needed to unload about that one. And yeah, so yeah, he also talked about, you know, it, not as much detail, but you know what went wrong with the Steve Austin Live podcast, and you know,
oh
yeah, he probably goes into more detail about certain other things that he didn't go into detail on the Jericho podcast. Wade Keller is a good interviewer. I've never not thought that about him.
Gotcha. So, yeah, I guess that those are definitely two of the more interesting topics that he did not touch upon on Jericho's show that would pique my interest, because you know, it's one of those things that I guess in any type of office environment, I'm not surprised that there's some level of red tape.
Yeah.
You know, when people complain about it being the government, but it doesn't happen in jobs, and I just start laughing because, oh, well, because the government doesn't own it, there's no bureaucracy, and it's just like, oh, you've never worked for a corporation then? Is the only thing that ever runs through my mind. So that part really didn't, it didn't surprise me, but I also understand being frustrated with it. And if there's an alternative that, which I would think there's still got to be some level of oversight in AEW.
Yeah. There certainly will be, and you know, and one of the main promotional vehicles for AEW, at least until they get on TV, is the Being the Elite show, which is a lot of goofy comedy, which is what Moxley seems to want to get away from. So that will be interesting, you know, as time goes on, if they want him to, you know, get involved. Have you watched this week's Being the Elite?
I did watch that, and I did kind of get a kick out of Nick and Matt trying to do the Shield fist bump with Dean Ambrose. Well,
yeah,
with John Moxley.
If that's all they do, and that is Dean Ambrose, and it is John Moxley saying that, hey, you know, I'm not here for this goofy shit. I think that could be good, but once again, it's just like, we're trying. It's when it comes to Moxley, you know, complaining about all the goofy stuff they were doing, you know, I've always told a story about him meeting him while wearing my oversized cowboy hat, and then, you know, him going on TV wearing an oversized cowboy hat like a week later. I don't, you know, it was just him and one representative from WWE, who, Tim White, the old referee who would kill himself every week, on WWE.com. So there was no WWE writers there. So I have no reason not to believe that wasn't his idea. So maybe take a little bit of an issue with him saying that that's all they wanted him to do, and that, you know. And maybe it was a situation where, you know, it always went back and forth. As it said about Vince, that, like, he changes his mind about what he wants, you know, all the time. And, you know, maybe he was saying, I want you to be a goofball. No, I want you to be more serious. I want you to be a goofball. I want you to be more serious, you know. And that in itself could get could obviously get very frustrating.
Well, and it could have been too, where that to me was the beginning of his run, or at least closer to it. And I could see going, oh, okay, I'll roll with this for now. But then when you're in like year five of doing goofy shit, it's just like, no, I don't. And again, there's nothing wrong with it, and we've expressed our love for it. Love for him, I should say, not it. R-Truth. You know, he's great. I'm glad the dude still has a job, and obviously he has a very bizarre championship that he's holding. But it's getting him on TV, and he's getting paid, but I could see Moxley not wanting to be stuck in at least a similar situation.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you keep on doing that goofy shit.
I mean, and I think he said that. I'm not going to remember which podcast he said it on, but he said about, you know, let me decide when it's the right time to be funny.
Oh.
I know my character. I know what my character should be. Like, during the course of the Brock feud, that was not the time for any comedy.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah, and I mean, it was weird for me to hear him say that, you know, he was pretty much on his way out before he even came back from the injury. Because what happened afterward, that is where I really, really understand. And that's where he detailed on Jericho's show. Those last, you know, 6 months. And I completely understand and sympathize with how he feels about how his heel turn was managed.
Yeah, and I saw the what the supposed quote was that he was supposed to read but refused to.
Yeah, and Jericho's already denied it. So we don't need to say it here.
That's kind of funny because I kind of laughed because I'm like, well, Jericho does kind of seem to have a big yapper, or at least the guy likes his adult beverages. And I could see it coming out by accident somewhere along the line. But, you know, still suffice it to say that if you're kind of getting to that, you know, a level that a guy doesn't want to, you know, like he's kind of airing all of his dirty laundry and he doesn't want to air that part. Even if that is not in particular the quote, it would seem like it's something along those lines, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's got to be similarly offensive in its nature.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. I mean, there's no reason to lie about that. I'm sure, it was pretty bad. I mean, the stuff that actually got on TV, you know, any of it was awful. And, you know, as I said, the stuff about how people smell and the inoculation segment, and I mean, all of that makes me, I totally understand at that point why he wanted to get out, and if all that kind of, you know, brought up all the other frustrations throughout the years of, you know, from the Brock match to the fallout of the Steve Austin interview to him, you know, being, you know, the top guy on SmackDown, but, you know, SmackDown kind of treated like the redheaded stepchild or blue-headed stepchild. I understand how, you know, a guy who really believes in himself as because it really that's what it came down to, is the promos. A guy who really believes in himself as being a promo guy, not being allowed to be himself. And that is it. That, you know, after years and years and years and you know, having to deal with that creative structure and all that red tape and all the bureaucracy and just trying to get anything done and, you know, not completely believing in your character, I completely understand and accept what, you know, why a guy like him, you know, after he's made his money, I mean, which, you know, he's never said that, you know, he's...
Oh, Well, yeah, he definitely, he didn't dwell on it on Jericho's podcast, but he definitely is like, hey man, my house is paid off, my mom's house is paid off, I'm in good shape. Like, I'm not, you know, because he did kind of have his caveats, at least on Jericho's podcast about, you know, this isn't, you know, this is a very specific argument, I guess, is what he made. And it was definitely the creative end, and his, like you rightly point out, his the interview, you know, the promo aspect of it more than anything else.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that was certainly his focus of all this frustration. And yeah, I mean, I absolutely get it. I think that. I mean, again, he's you know, thankful for his run, thankful for the living he got to make, thankful obviously for meeting his wife,
and thankful.
But it get to the point where, and boy, does he seem like a man who is truly in love with his wife and enjoys spending time with her more than anything else. That was actually really awesome to hear.
Yeah, they seem quite happy together, and I'm happy to see that.
I am happy that there was nothing in the script from Monday that put her in any kind of an embarrassment. I'm glad they decided not to be that petty. after all of his grievances coming out.
Agreed. It's something that they could have done and thankfully did not do. I guess, is there anything else to get to before heading on out?
No, I think we're pretty good this week.
Okie dokie. He's at Chris Calamita. I'm at Frango11. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you happen to listen to us, and have a good night.
Later.